You've reached the Every Little Thing helpline. Please rattle her off your question after the tone.
Hi, my name is Brenna. I have two pet snakes, and I was looking up random facts about snakes the other day and found out there's this thing called a titanoboa. It's just a huge freaking snake. And they found fossils of it and stuff. And then I started thinking, like, we have giant sharks, giant dinosaurs, and I want to know, why do animals that were so big and so powerful, why did they get smaller? Thank you. Bye.
Hello?
Hey, Brenna. It's Flora from ELT.
Hi.
So, are you a snake freak?
Yeah, quite a bit.
Have you always been a snake person?
Yeah, I'd say so. Definitely a, like, reptile person. If there was ever a lizard or a snake outside in my backyard as a kid, I would be like, all right, come to catch it. I'm putting it in a box. I'm naming it Jeffrey.
You mentioned pets in your voicemail. So tell me about your tube kittens.
My tube kittens? I have two. One, my first one that I got, his name is Udon, because I named them all after noodles, because that's what they are.
I mean, it makes sense. It adds up.
Yeah, he's like probably 2 years old now. He's like 3 feet long. He's an albino corn snake.
Okay. Googling albino corn snake. Ooh, so beautiful.
Yeah.
He looks like a creamsicle.
Yeah, I think the morph is literally called creamsicle. I always call Udon my handsome little gentleman because he just is. He's just so nice. I just pick him up and then he's just like, hi. And I give him to friends and I'm like, you want to hold a snake? And he's just so nice to everybody.
Like he hasn't tried to kill anyone yet.
No, no.
What's your other snake like?
My other snake's name is Soba.
What kind of snake is she?
She's a jungle carpet python. She's like yellow and black, kind of like striped. Really cool contrast.
Uh-huh.
She's like 1 or 2 feet long, but she's going to get like 7 feet long when she's all grown up.
How big is your apartment?
It's pretty small. I live in a studio apartment. Just like my little living room area is just like my couch. I'm sitting right in between two big old snake tanks.
So what brought on the giant snakery that you called us with?
Yeah, so I mean, I was definitely at home chilling. I'm pretty sure I was researching, like, can snakes hear if they don't have ears?
Uh-huh.
And then I just kind of went down this spiral of snake biology. It was like Wikipedia had a link for titanoboa. And I was like, the heck is that?
Titanoboa, so that's the ancient giant snake you mentioned in your voicemail.
Yeah.
I think giant snake for some people would be a nightmare scenario.
Yeah.
But for you?
I love it.
So what do you want to know?
I want to know why there were such big animals in the past, like giant sharks, titanoboas, all these things that seem so powerful. Why are they small now? Like, I feel like you'd want to be a big, powerful, strong, vicious thing.
Logically, you would think if you are like a giant udon.
Yeah.
That you'd be a king of the world.
Yeah. If it's so big and so powerful, why are they small now? Why did it go away?
Okay. So I think we found just the snake whisperer to answer your questions.
I'm a little bit of the Lorax for snakes.
So he speaks for the snakes. I love that because that's what I feel like I am. I'm constantly defending my love of snakes.
This is snake biologist and snake evangelist Jason Head.
Hi, Brenna.
Hi, Jason.
And like you, he loves snakes of all kinds. Big snakes, wee snakes.
Sea snakes, snakes that live in trees, snakes that burrow, snakes that get to be 7 meters long, snakes that can curl up on a dime, snakes that can eat people, snakes that specialize in eating ant eggs. Snakes do it all.
So Jason also had a pet snake, a python named Socrates.
I love that little snake.
Who was named after the world famous Peter Murphy song, not the barely known philosopher.
Oh, I see.
So we called Jason because he figured out exactly how humongaboa titanoboa was, and he could tell us what its life was like and what might explain its demise. So curl up under your heat lamp and bust out your mice crackers, Brenna, because Jason's going to tell you the tale of how scientists found the largest snake to ever slither. The story starts in the mid-2000s at a coal mine in Colombia called Cerrejón. Cerrejón is an open-pit mine, and that's a pretty good description. Picture a giant gaping hole in the earth. It's hot and dusty and crawling with backhoes and giant trucks.
The tires on these trucks are like 12 to 15 feet tall. They're these huge things.
And even more intimidating, there's literally fire shooting out of the ground.
When you expose coal to an oxygen environment after 60 million years, it will spontaneously combust.
Wow.
If you have seen the last of the Tolkien Lord of the Rings trilogy.
Yes, I have.
The very end where the hobbits are crossing through Mordor to get to Mount Doom, and there's fire coming out of the ground, and it's awful and terrible and hot and miserable. Now imagine that with sunny skies, and that's kind of the Cerrejón mine.
In this fiery hellscape, miners started finding old bones, and not Elijah Woods or that other guy's, but fossilized turtle shells and crocodile parts.
Oh, wow.
And some colleagues of Jason heard about the fossils and went to Cerrejón to look for more. And that's when they came across something really perplexing. It was a vertebra, and it looked like it should have belonged to a snake, but the size was off the charts. Like, it would have had to be
a huge animal. Like, way bigger than any snake anyone would ever believe.
And Jason didn't believe it. When one of the scientists who found the fossil called to tell him, "We have the biggest snake to ever live," Jason was like,
"Yeah, I'm sure you do. Sure you do."
Jason needed to see it for himself, so they got on Skype, and when he laid eyes on the fossil,
I got very, very, very excited.
It was indeed an enormous, humongous, positively gigundous snake bone.
I immediately started trying to calculate how big that thing would have been in real life in my head, and the numbers were kind of going all over the place.
To figure out the snake's exact dimensions, Jason needed a few more vertebrae. So he and other scientists kept snake bone hunting, and they found hundreds more snake fossils in this mine. And they determined that these snakes lived 58 to 60 million years ago. And in case you only think in geologic time, that's 6 million years after the dinosaurs went extinct, but long before the Ice Age.
Okay.
They determined it was a water snake, so picture it slithering around a prehistoric swamp. And you might be familiar with the snake's family tree. They're related to New World boas.
Anacondas, boa constrictors, rainbow boas, tree boas, sand boas, and Madagascar boas.
Your jungle carpet python, Soba, is not in this group, but would be a relation, like a great-great-great-great-grand nibbling.
Yeah, that's not a bad analogy.
Oh.
So using the vertebrae they found, Jason estimated Titanoboa's full body length. And he says the snake would stretch to roughly 15 udons.
45 feet?
Yes.
So kind of 45, 46 feet?
I'm trying to picture, like, what do I know that's 45 feet?
Well, I asked Jason for some helpful analogies. If you cast the snake in Snakes on a Plane 2, would it fit into a 747?
Uncomfortably. It wouldn't be happy.
I'm picturing it squeezing itself all curled up in the plane, being like the only passenger.
In first class.
First class and economy, all of it.
Here's another analogy.
Well, I'm looking at a four-story building and, you know, the snake would go halfway up.
Like if the snake was climbing the building.
That's a picture that I'm picturing for sure.
Okay, are you still like, ooh, this sounds fun, or is it starting to get frightening? Or is that just me?
It still sounds fun. I mean, I don't exist when it lived, so I don't feel threatened by it. I'm just fascinated.
Here's one more analogy. If you made it into a belt, would it wrap around the equator?
Not so much the equator, but certainly you could probably wrap it around a decent NBA team.
Wrap it around a what?
A decent NBA team. The old snake wrapped around a decent NBA team metric.
Of course.
Okay, so that's the length. In terms of girth, you could probably just barely get your arms around this snake. You know, if you tried to give it a big snake hug.
Now we're getting into territory where I would be a little scared.
Yeah.
I guess it depends on its body language. If it seems like it's mellow and not getting ready to strike, then I could maybe not hug it. But yeah, I'd give it a pat on the head like a giant dog.
Drape it over your shoulders?
I think I would collapse.
You're right.
Titanoboa could be up to about a ton and a quarter body mass.
We're talking 2,500 pounds.
Oh my gosh.
So this super squisher needed a name, and there were a number of options. Bigaboa, Largeaboa, Woaboa, Holy Moly Boa, look at the size of that f***ing Snakeaboa.
But once Titanoboa hit, it was kind of like, nope, that's it. It felt right.
I think it does sound better than, look at that f***ing Snakeaboa.
When we come back, what does a 45-foot-long snake eat for lunch?
Whatever it wanted.
That's after the break. So I want to send you a picture of Titanoboa, and we'll put it on Instagram at ELT Show.
I got it.
It's a museum floor model, but it's to scale.
Wow. Look at those there's people right there. They're so small. That's insane. Definitely could not hold it. I don't even know if an NBA team could hold that. What, is it eating a crocodile?
Yes. The crocodile in its mouth looks like a tiny worm.
I know. It looks just like the mice that I feed my normal-sized snakes, but it's a crocodile.
Yeah. And that crocodile in its mouth isn't just for dramatic effect. Jason says huge crocs were probably on the menu for Titanoboa, along with turtles that are way bigger than snack-sized.
Damn. I feel like even just a normal turtle would be hard to eat.
I know. And the fish were longer than most decent NBA players.
Oh my gosh. So I guess I probably would be kind of on the dinner menu.
You'd be lunch. That's right.
I feel like it's like the vacuum. The vacuum of its day. It would just kind of go around and be like, all right, cool. Yeah, I could eat that.
Yeah. It was basically the apex predator of its ecosystem.
It seems like Titanoboa had the world in its scales, right? It's apex predating, vacuuming up all its contemporaries.
Yeah, it can just slither around, doesn't need to worry about anything. So, where did it go? If it's so big and powerful, living the good life, why isn't it here today?
Yeah, what went down? Jason says we don't know exactly what happened to Titanoboa, but he also said living large isn't everything it's cracked up to be.
Bigger is rarely better in a lot of ways.
Being supersized comes at a cost. For starters, a 1,500-pound snake has limited housing options.
That makes sense. I don't even know if it would fit in my apartment.
I would safely say it would not. But it's not just the square footage.
I think if you had Titanoboa on land, the pressure on its body and the mass of its body would make it very difficult for the animal to actually ventilate its lungs. I think it would be hard for the animal to breathe.
It's so heavy that it would squish its own lungs.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, that sucks.
So it had to live in water. Now, even if you could squeeze Titanoboa in your tub, as you know, there's also the temperature issue.
It's why I have to have a heat pad and a lamp and thermometers in my tanks.
Yeah, so snakes like it hot in general because they don't generate their own body heat and instead absorb it from the environment. But for a snake this size, the heat lamps wouldn't cut it. Extra large snakes need it extra hot.
We actually calculated what the temperature would have had to have been 58 million years ago, minimally, to keep Titanoboa alive.
Basically, you can look at the size of a snake and estimate how hot its environment needed to be for it to survive there.
So we used the snake as a thermometer to reconstruct the past.
The snake is the thermometer?
Yeah.
Okay. That's kind of cool.
And they calculated that Titanoboa's swampy snake gland was about 4 degrees hotter than it is today.
Okay.
So those are some of the constraints on Titanoboa. It needed a big, super warm, watery place to stretch out in, and that limited where it could live.
That does make sense to me. You gotta worry about breathing. You gotta worry about being hot enough.
Yeah. Another challenge that applies to all gigantic creatures, not just XXL snakes, is that a habitat can only support so many of them. There's only so much food and space to go around. So big animals in general have smaller population sizes, and that makes them more vulnerable to being wiped out.
Yeah, there could have been just one left, and it's like, oh man, I can't find love anymore.
And while Titanoboa lived long before humans, for other giant animals, there's an added challenge. Us.
Humans have had an impact on our environments in terms of, you know, reducing diversity and selective extinction of large animals for a lot longer than we realize. We have a tendency to think about human impacts as being kind of a late 19th to 20th century industrial revolution, modernization effect. But of course, everywhere we have migrated into since leaving Africa has accompanied a mass extinction event of large animals.
I forget that we hunted big things too. You know, we'd see a mammoth and be like, all right, let's 10 of us get together and make a hunting party.
Right. And we've turned wild spaces into farms and strip malls and golf courses. There just isn't that much undeveloped habitat left for big-bodied, curvaceous creatures.
Yeah, the pieces are coming together. I do wish I could see what it was like when there were so many giant turtles and crocodiles and snakes, and that would just be pretty cool to just stand there and be like so tiny.
I like the image of Titanoboa in the bay or some, you know, estuary nearby snacking on sailors.
Yeah, it would need a lot of people to to be full.
Like maybe even a decent sized NBA team.
Yeah.
If you have a burning question you can't get out of your head, call us 833-RING-ELT, 833-RING-ELT.
Every Little Thing is produced by Jahi Whitehead, Hadley Robinson, Stephanie Werner, Phoebe Flanagan, Annette Heist, and Flora Lichtman. With help from Nicole Pasulka and Doug Barron, our editors are Jorge Just and Caitlin Kenny. Scored by Dara Hirsch, Bobby Lord, Billy Libby, and Emma Munger. Mixed by Dara Hirsch. Every Little Thing is a Gimlet production and a Spotify original podcast. Pass the mice crackers, please. Goodbye.